Hello, everyone. Welcome to our new episode of It's Gonna Be Okay. Today, I have a very special treat. I have Becca Ward, and she just got off of her first live taping recording from Laugh After Dark in Vegas, dude. How do you feel about that?
It was terrifying and amazing, truly amazing. They had an AI camera set up, which was my first time seeing that follow your face, which was cool. But also, we did Skankfest the week before.
Oh, okay.
So we spent 8 days in Vegas.
Wow,
which is probably like 6 days too many.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So Becca, we obviously, you know, that this is a podcast about mental health. And I know you through comedy. Know you strictly through comedy. You're a good comedian, excellent, you know, stage presence, just wild, all Thank over you. Wild. Your energy is just
like, there's a reason.
Yes, there is a reason. And every time it's like, let's peel off that layer and figure it out. You know what I mean? I don't have to figure it out because most of the people that I bring on here already know what's wrong with them. You know, I'm not saying anything's wrong with you. I'm just saying that, you know, we know who we are as people.
Yes.
You know, and we've learned to live with whatever it is that we've gone through. Do you mind sharing what, cause I know like some people don't have diagnoses, you know, or, you know, they don't necessarily have like an explicit reason for, you know, whatever it is. They've just been around through trauma or they've learned how to deal with it, but you have a specific diagnosis.
I do.
Yeah.
So, my mom, alcoholic our whole lives, and we were abused so badly as kids. And then she abandoned us at a therapist's office when was about to turn 13. And so for a long time, I didn't have a diagnosis because I had trauma associated with
the abandonment.
The therapist's office. And when I would try to go in and sit in the waiting room, I would just start getting these panic attacks because it was just triggering from being left there by my mom. It's like, I don't know what to do with these crazy kids, but she has borderline personality disorder.
Your mother.
But she doesn't seek any treatment and she just kind of self-medicates with the booze. But for me, finding out that I had complex PTSD and that I was triggered by, which were places I couldn't feel like I could get out of. Like there was claustrophobia involved. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just an overstimulation involved that my body would just shut down. I was having all these physical responses. And I was getting it under control. I was seeing a therapist. Everything was great. They were really shocked at how high functioning I was. But that was because 10 years ago, I moved away. And I just started really healing on my own time and in my own way and not being re-traumatized by having kind of false stories put in my head.
Yeah.
So when I was 25, I had somebody break into my apartment and was re-traumatized completely. Like it was my first safe home in my entire life was when I was 25. I had a great partner, great life, lived in this beautiful loft in downtown LA. I'm starting my comedy career. Mm. This coked up, like, middle-aged white guy, CEO of blah, 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 who the frick cares, like, you know, breaks into my apartment and tries to sexually assault me. Got naked, like, tries to crawl on my bed. And that first and only home that I felt safe in, it was destroyed.
So and you feel disassociated from it.
And I couldn't sleep. I wouldn't sleep in the bed. It destroyed my relationship. And then I started experiencing a crazy amount of health problems immediately after, where it set off so much stress that it kicked my hyperthyroid, like, which was already like moderately hyper, like my entire life. I've been thin my whole life, but then just kicked it into a gear where it was like my ADHD was out of control and my anxiety was out of control and my reaction to trauma was like just, I was like the worst person I think I had been in a really long time.
Okay, so for me at least, I mean, I want to kind of put this into context, like a timeline, basically, because mm-hmm. I know you, like you're just giving it off uh-huh. like from the top of your head. So you said moved away. Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from West Virginia.
Okay.
I grew up in a town of 31 houses.
Like Amish, like you like that kind of, really?
So in Darksville, West Virginia, and then when I was 11, we had a tornado hit, and mm-hmm. 28 of the houses were gone.
Oh my God.
And so we just live in this little lonely house. And I'll tell you, out there, especially, your closest neighbor is miles away, so nobody's watching. You know, there are no resources.
Yeah, nobody can hear you scream. You know, yeah. like that kind of
thing.
And
I'm one of eight children. Wow. So, and I'm number five. So I was so far down the line for anything like braces, mental health.
Neglected. Food. Yeah, you're just like, you definite nipple insecurity. Yeah, down the litter. I know. I say that stuff to my mom because she came from a litter of 12, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, and they all crossed the border. Yeah, but. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned that your mom abandoned you, but do you still know? Are you still in contact with her?
It's a complicated
relationship.
We ebb and flow,
okay.
Where it's, if I am in a good mental place, yes.
Okay.
I can handle it. But even so, little known fact, I'm getting married in October.
Good. Congratulations.
It's really exciting. Yeah. Thank you so much. But she wants to be hyper involved in the wedding. And I would listen to this podcast called Other People's Problems. And it was talking, which I loved. And it was Canadian therapy sessions. And I was listening to the girl's story about not feeling like she could invite her mom to the wedding. I knew that was a non-option. Like, she needs to be involved. But right. I know also the weight. I pick up probably 1 in 10 phone calls.
Oh, my God.
Because I can't.
That's a lot.
Last night, we're on the phone, you know, I could tell she's been drinking, which is just, it's an
awful.
So
she's still drinking then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, time. Okay. Yeah, so that's another reason why it gets tricky and gets hard, because her memory of things is not everyone else's memory of things, you know?
I am familiar with that kind of, yeah. And so I can see how that would probably add to like some of the abuse that you experienced as a child.
Oh yeah.
Know?
That in like in our elementary school also would beat us. So my mom got the idea of the paddle from our elementary school.
Oh my
from
God.
Our Christian Academy that would whoop us. So then my mom took the same paddle, but she drilled 16 little holes in it. So
to
it would
make
have,
it aerodynamic?
Yeah, so it would have less wind
I'm
resistance.
Sorry, that's kind of like,
and it was
brilliantly
abusive. Like, and I make a lot of jokes now where people apologize to me for, you know, everything that's happening with Jewish people right now and because of my nose. And I tell them, no, it's okay. I just have a mean mom. Like, you don't have to apologize.
So is this from your mom?
My mom's broken my nose. I mean, it's just one of those things where I saw, for me, I went to this, in high school, I went to this place called Alateen meetings, and it was for kids with alcoholic parents. And I just heard some of the wildest stories that I related to on such a hardcore level that I was like, at a very young age, at like 13 years old, I saw I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. There is a group. There are resources. If I choose to love myself first and figure this out for me instead of trying to take care of mom, try to take care of my 7 siblings, try to take care of my dad, try to take everybody else, if I actually focus on myself, I might make it out of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I might be okay.
Well, that's actually really smart, though. Most people don't discover that until afterwards, until they're older. But, I mean, so at what age did was the abandonment part of the larger portion of what triggered you, or
the PTSD came mostly from the physical abuse.
Okay.
Where it's like, you know, things that if you describe it to people in comedy, it sounds funny. Oh, my mom would tickle me till I peed myself. But like, how mortifying is that in front of a room full of people that your mom is willing to pin you down and do something kind of torturous. So like, now I, like, even especially with men, they think it's so freaking funny and cute, like to poke,
tickle
like,
you,
jab
yeah.
you in the side. First of all, like, it's kind of aggressive and it's kind of fast. Like, and I don't like those either.
You don't like swift movement?
No, yeah. I like to just, you know, it's the gentle approach always works best with me. But
yeah,
it's like,
no, that's I appreciate that a lot.
But
yeah.
I noticed with certain things, two major things that I noticed was flinching, like when somebody would reach for me really quick, I would always flinch back, and that felt embarrassing for me, so I kind of tried to work that out.
Yeah.
Also, as somebody who does comedic acting or like character comedy, you want to be in control of all your tics and all kind of your isms. That's why I dropped my West Virginia accent, which I can still very much call back at any moment in time, but I don't speak like that because I noticed people thought that I was stupid, so I fixed that.
Really? Like, wait, okay, so what does it sound like? I don't think I'm very familiar with
it. Well, my name is Rebecca.
Oh, my God. Okay, that kind of
accent. Oh, bless your heart. Yes, ma'am. All the way from the deep south. But it's the Virginia South, so talk a little bit like you got a little bit of marbles in your mouth, too.
I feel like that is the Westboro Baptist Church.
It is. I grew up in a Baptist church.
Oh, my God.
But
okay.
But the other thing I noticed big time for triggers was my mom, as like a unit of like punishment, as a measure of punishment, she would lock us in our rooms. Like if I left a cereal bowl out on the table, no matter the fact that we had a hoarder's house, if I left a bowl out, I was sent to my room and I had to quote unquote clean my room all day. But no food, no breakfast, no lunch, no dinner. I just locked in my room for the entire day. And
oh
I could come
God.
Out the next morning. And I realized like I hoard food. I totally hoard food, and I've broken it. I've worked on it now because, again, it's like I didn't realize these things until I lived with my first partner, and it's like holding up a mirror to yourself. You have all these other young boyfriends in high school and college telling you how perfect you are, how amazing, like because you've been through so much. Wow, and you've come so far. You put yourself through college.
You had some really good partners to tell you that.
I did. I dated ugly nerds. They are like the most loving, but you are not the point of contention is you're not sexually attracted to them.
Yeah.
But you're safe. And then they cheat on you and you're like, why? And you're like, oh,
you know
I'm
what?
Not having sex with you.
Yeah, you're not.
Because you're actually just supposed to be a really good friend. Like,
So getting back to your mom, I mean, I'm trying to like figure out like a timeline, you know, like at what age did she abandon you? And that was
when we were, I was 12.
Okay.
Just, right. And I had spent no time with my dad. Like my mom would do this thing where my dad would call and he'd say, Laurie, I just want to see my kids. And she's like, you're behind on child support. No, you pay your child support. Fine. You know, but up until then, no. She said, if you come on my property, I will call the police because you will be trespassing. And then she would turn around and tell us, hey, kids, your dad's coming on Sunday. You know, make sure that y'all are ready to go. And we would sit there by the door all day long with our little suitcases on Sunday, waiting for our dad to come pick us up. And my mom just sit there watching.
She'll set that up for you, almost like an emotional
abuse,
like a manipulative thing.
She's like, you should start calling him Bio Dad because he's never there for you. He's never at any of your games. He's never, you know, I'm the one who drives you to gymnastics. I'm the one who drives you to ballet. I'm the one who takes you to cheerleading. You know, it is when you live with a person who is unwell, like you just grow up in a way that is so chaotic, but it is so normalized to you.
That
you go to school and you're like, wait, nobody else smells like cigarettes because no one else's mom smokes two packs a day inside their house. Like,
so I have a question. So did that affect the way you learned how to trust like your reality or just trust people in general when you grew up? Because I know PTSD has that kind of...
I kind of went the other way.
Where I
was like, see, it can never be as bad as it was.
Really?
And that person was supposed to love me the most, and she was the worst. So these other people, like, first of all, my expectation of people is very low.
Yeah.
Like, when you come from nothing, everything feels like something. And your gratitude just for everything shoots off because you're like, wow, this is so cool. I thought I was going to die back there when I was, like, six. You know, like,
yeah.
So you have this... Like, I just don't expect anything from anybody because my grandparents, like, they tried to step in a little bit, but not really.
Yeah.
My dad didn't step in until my mom went to the mental hospital. Like, nobody stepped in to save us when we were 8 years old. Who the fuck's going to save me at 31?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, exactly. And that is how that works.
I definitely fell into, like, looking for my Prince Charming, though. That was definitely something that I found that I would do, is I almost always have had a partner.
Like, do you think that has to do with, you know, you finding safety?
Like, if worst case scenario, I can't look out for myself, I need to find somebody who fills in the gaps in the ways that, like, I can't look out for myself. That's not a partnership.
No, you know? That's codependency.
That's codependency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you learn to live well on your own. And then sometimes I, like, willingly invite chaos into my life because it's, like, I, part of, like, this adrenaline with the hyperthyroid and with, like, the ADHD and, like, getting these really high kind of, like, even when I'm on stage, I have these kind of blackout moments where your adrenaline is just pumping so hard and your body is working so hard that you just kind of black out or blank. Like, sober as a judge, it's just what happens. Like, so I think that I, at a time in my 20s, I loved that feeling.
Yeah.
And now I know what it feels like to have consistency at home and still
actual stability.
Right, stability, but still have, like, it's my house. Like, my partner is great, but it's my house. Like, wow, I make all the decisions in our house. Like, he doesn't like to. I love to make decisions. So I found a partner who's, like, conducive to this style of, like...
So it works for you, yeah.
Yeah, I get to have my independent... Like, I feel, like, the most independent even that I've probably felt since college when my boyfriend's parents paid for my tonsillectomy.
Okay, so I do have a, like... So you mentioned that, you know, you went through this trauma, but what was it? I know you said that you had, like, resources available to you at a younger age. Was there any point where you were just like, this isn't enough, I need to start taking medication? Or was there a way that, because I know, like, some people, especially when they're going through something like that, they don't realize that they get into drug abuse and they start self-soothing, or they get into, like, very self-destructive behaviors as a way to self-soothe what they went through.
I started drinking really young. Really young.
Like, how young was
13,
that?
13, probably.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I did Molly for the first time when I was, like, 14. I got it all out of my system because my dad was just kind of like, I'm going to France for 3 weeks. Here's my credit card and car keys. And he would just go. He treated us like roommates. But I was just turning 13. So I'm going to party.
Wait, what'd your dad do for a living?
No, my aunt has miles.
I was like, wow, what kind of...
But it was crazy because, I mean, he would just leave us to our own devices. I was like, well, shit, I always wanted to be, like, popular. But the way I could think of to do it was invite everybody to my house. We all drink, like, Natty Light, you know.
And yeah, you did, like, things to make people
weed.
Like you.
Yeah. But then, so I tried some focus meds because the thyroid issue has started popping up actually when I was, like, 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. But two weird things. One is it's glorified to be thin. So I didn't actually know that I was not healthy.
Oh, wow.
Because I could eat whatever I wanted. Everyone's like, oh, you just have a fast metabolism.
Yeah,
oh, you're
but
so
you have,
lucky.
You have hyperthyroid.
But I have a hyperthyroid.
Oh, my God.
So it's like, it's actually very important what I eat, when I eat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I would go through these things where, like, I mean, I would eat, like, a whole bag of Doritos before I went to bed. And I would wake up at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning and feel like somebody punched me in the stomach. Like, I hadn't eaten in, like, 3 days. Like,
oh, my God.
I definitely was, like, a binge eater. Like, I was definitely way into food. But because it was no consequence to me, you know, I could just eat. Other than I would either go, you know, 18 hours with no sleep or sleep for 12 hours. Like, it was kind of, my sleep was all out of whack.
Yeah.
But, once it was really when the guy broke into my apartment that it just set off my constant defense. Like, I was constantly on guard and my anxiety ramped up so bad that it kicked my whole body, just kind of kicked into gear.
Yeah. They call that hypervigilance.
Yeah.
That
my thyroid just
it spiked.
Went nuts. It was crazy. My teeth started breaking. The hormone levels in my saliva had changed. So it's like my teeth were just cracking and breaking. And I'm like 25, 26 years old. I'm like,
how recent was that? What's wrong
with me? This is like 5 years ago.
Oh my God. And was this during the pandemic?
Yeah. It was before and right during. So yeah, it had happened in November, like that bad experience had happened in November. And then same thing, I tried to get therapy at the mental health services in downtown LA.
Yeah.
And there were just so many kind of like unhinged people in there. I panicked. I freaked out. I waited there for probably 40 minutes before I was like,
yeah.
I went outside. I was pacing. I tried to just like smoke a cigarette. I tried to like just kind of take my mind off, listen to podcasts, do this. I was like, I can't be here.
Yeah.
I can't be here. I have to go. And then I just run. That's the other thing is when I don't want to be somewhere, I don't like casually, coolly walk away. I will just jog
you'll
away.
You'll flee?
Yes.
You're like a cat, like a scurrying cat.
Yeah, I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. And like, and I flap and I'll just like, you know, I definitely still have panic responses, but a lot of times it's also the only time as a goofy person that people take me seriously.
Yeah.
Cause otherwise people think I'm kidding, but if I'm running away from you,
like physically running away from you,
chances are I don't like what just happened.
Yes. That is a physical response to something that you, yeah. I mean, can you imagine, like, if somebody you didn't like tries to come and say hi to you, like,
I do that.
Becca's
I do.
Gone.
No, I do. I do that. I can't handle it. I get so overstimulated that I get physical reactions, like, where I'll start sweating really bad. And, like, my whole face will get really red. And, like, maybe my hands will shake a little bit. It's just that.
Unnerving.
Yeah. And a lot of it, too. I learned now because after they tried to give me medicine for ADHD, they were like, because you had a hard life, we're going to give you Vyvanse because it has some antidepressant in it too. And I was like, this stuff, the only thing this does is make me fart. Okay. Like, I swear to you, I'm at Trader Joe's and like, I'm prop dusting everyone at Trader Joe's.
What's interesting to me is that they gave you a drug that accelerates things more. Because you know what
nobody,
I mean?
They thought I had an eating disorder.
Oh.
And nobody wanted to talk to me about it. Nobody asked me. Literally for 10 years, my entire family talked behind my back. Like, not one, I'm one of eight kids, not one freaking person. And my sister finally cracked and said something. She's like, oh, it's your thyroid? She's like, we all just thought that you were bulimic because you have bad teeth and you're skinny.
Oh, wow.
Not one person ever asked me, how are you health-wise, mentally, physically? Like, what are you going through? Like, you look skinny. What's up with you?
Yeah.
You know, just anything like that. And then because I told my sister, I was like, okay, then what y'all were doing was you were gossiping.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't come to you guys with these things. Like, because it just misinformation spreads, you know?
Yeah.
But because if it was care, not gossip, somebody would have come to me.
Well, I mean, that also depends on how close you are with your siblings,
not,
you know?
Yeah, not nearly as close as
exactly.
We were back in the trauma bonding days.
Yeah, I think because I feel like those kinds of questions, like, I wouldn't go and ask anybody, you know? So I feel like that relationship.
I wouldn't assume, but I think that there's a way where it's like, if my dad had called me and had been like, hey, babe, are you doing okay?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, asking, you know, are you all right?
Do you have enough to eat at home?
Yeah.
Like, I just noticed, like, you're so skinny. And I know, like, you look good. Like, don't worry. You look good. Like, I need to be told that.
Yeah.
I have an ego. But it's like, yeah, nobody asked. Everybody just kind of assumed. But it's like, I love me and have always loved me. And I'm like, I would never do that to myself. Like,
yeah.
And I'm so grateful that I didn't grow up in LA. There are a lot of women here. My best friend was born and raised here. And the pressure that she felt for her body to be a certain way, I can't believe that I just got to play naked outside on a farm, you know?
Yeah.
The worst problem I had was my mom would be like, God damn it, Bruce, the kids have worms again.
Oh, my God.
Because we play naked in the chicken coop all the time.
You're like, it's either worms or bulimia. I don't, worms or looking like a worm. I don't, you know. That's so silly.
Yeah. But it's like, it also was just funny to me because I've always been this size. But nobody, everyone was like, you have acid reflux. You have this. You have an eating disorder. You have that. But like, nobody guessed, even though I have history of thyroid issue in my family.
Mm-hmm. No one guessed that. Nobody put two and two together.
No one said autoimmune disorder. Like, clearly, like, you know, you're getting sick every day of the week. Like, nobody put it together. They were like, we'll take your tonsils out. That should help.
I mean, you know, it might also depend on the level of education of the people you're talking to,
You're totally right. That's, because California has amazing medicine.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, you really yes and no, but
even when I went to Mexico, they were like, yeah, we know exactly a specialist for you to talk to. We know exactly what's happening with your teeth because mm-hmm. we actually have a lot of experience with people with thyroid issues in their teeth breaking. And I was like, this is the first time that anyone has ever made me feel like this wasn't my fault.
Oh, so man, is there something that you're taking right now currently for the thyroidism?
No.
But how are you managing that?
With diet.
Oh, okay. Oh,
and,
my gosh.
And weed.
Diet and weed?
It's so bad. Well,
at least it'll slow something down. I don't know.
Because I tried the Vyvanse and I was like, this is not for me. Yeah. They tried me on another like kiddie one called Strattera when I was like young, just because I would never shut the fuck up. But that's just me.
When did you know that you had like, because I know we were talking about the PTSD.
They just called it hyperactive when I was a kid.
Yeah, hyperactive.
They were like, she's hyperactive.
But when did the hypothyroidism come in?
I started feeling symptoms when I was 18. They didn't figure it out until I was 25.
Oh, okay.
I think by 19, I was like really struggling. By 20, and then I kind of figured out how, like, I started working for Trader Joe's, and I started eating a lot better. You know, then the way I grew up, we don't have fresh things coming in. The closest warehouse to us in West Virginia was in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Oh my God, that's a whole different state.
Everything we eat is cans, frozen, preservatives.
Yeah.
You know? So
processed.
Yeah, processed. And so my body even transitioned hardcore when I went from not eating preservatives anymore. And then I would try to eat like a fast food something and my body would be like, what is this again? It's amazing. So eating healthier, immediately I started feeling a little bit healthier. Mm-hmm. And then I went to San Francisco and like partied a lot. And my health was kind of like,
because
I was partying a lot.
Yes.
I was in my young 20s. I was like, I'm just going to like get it out of my system. And I did. I really did. To where it's like now, and then I didn't drink for like 5 years. Then I came down here and I was like, I'm going to be serious about work. And then it was a lot of, therapy, a lot of like getting to know myself again, trying to figure out all this body stuff. Because I'm going to be straight with you. I don't really want to take pills until I absolutely have to, because I want them to work when I need them to work. I know that's maybe an old wives' tale.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You don't want to build a tolerance.
I don't.
Yeah.
And also it seriously messes with your hormones. Yeah. And it's just like, I'm not at an unhealthy weight because I eat 5 times a day. I still get overstimulated by life a lot? Yeah.
Well, I
but
mean,
the weed helps.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of people with hyperthyroidism and they manage by working out. Because they're building. Did they ever recommend
Everybody always tells me to. And I do my own thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. It's like, I know it sounds silly, but it's like, I do my own yard, right? Like, I take my dogs out. I've got 2 huge lab hound puppies that are freaking perfect. You know, we go running out there with them. I try to just incorporate exercise into my daily life, you know, because I just...
And I know that seems already counterproductive because you're thin, but they want you to build like muscle.
Well,
muscle
that
mass.
And I and I don't want to get osteoporosis.
Yes,
like, I'm at high risk for that.
Yeah.
So I've definitely like I feel like I've done my homework. I've done my research. If there are ever points that I'm getting too thin, It's usually for a reason. It's because I was just on antibiotics for my teeth,
okay.
And it just wrecked my stomach lining. And yeah. So I couldn't really keep food in for probably 5 days. 5 days for me is like, oh,
yeah,
it's bad. I'll go down from like 125 to like 112.
Yeah.
Which is not good. And yes, there are certain times where it's like, the one thing that I have enjoyed that I've been prescribed before, but since my life has really leveled, being in this beautiful house with my beautiful man in Long Beach, my beautiful dogs, it's like, but I loved when they would prescribe me Ativan. Because I could take...
Oh, that's a good drug. I've been on that before.
Half of an Ativan when I was panicked about all things. It was like, if the TV is going... And Alan's phone is going, and my phone is going, and the dogs are barking, and the neighbors are, it's like, I just, like, I can't even think. Like, yeah. I have to, I'm like, everything needs to be quiet. Like,
I feel that you kind of have that kind of scattered energy. Yeah.
And so, and honestly, because it's due to my thyroid, the thyroid gives me the ADHD. So it's not ADHD. So you think it feeds into... Well, then that gives me anxiety.
Okay.
It's the ADHD where I'm like, why can't I freaking focus, right?
So have you, like, is there any, like, technique that you use outside of, you know, medication, like, you know, kind of like things that you do to process your feelings?
Totally.
And your emotions? Are there things that you've done?
The two things when I'm feeling really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I just go in the shower and sing. Like really loudly, like yell sing, because it feels like I'm yelling, like getting it out.
Yeah.
And it's also like usually emotional and it's associated to whatever feeling I'm feeling. So if I can just do that really loudly, like usually the nerves kick in before a big good show.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm nervous and I'm stressed because, like, have I closed the windows? Are the dogs okay? Like, is Alan ready to go? Is he like ready to do this? Like, and so I'll just go, and it also kind of warms up my voice. So mm-hmm. It's multi-purpose, where I will just yell. But the other thing I do is when I'm feeling like, oh, shit, it's probably going to be like PMS blues plus down on myself because, like, I can't keep a 9-to-5. Like, I'm not a 9-to-5er and therefore don't have, like, a butt ton of money. So maybe a little money blues. Whatever. Whatever's getting me in the blues, I purposefully watch things that make me cry. Like, this is dumb, but like The Voice makes me cry so hard.
Oh my God.
Because here's why.
You watch the cheesiest thing on TV.
But it's like... because people have 5 minutes where they're like living their dream and they're seen by like all of America. And I'm like so proud of them. And I'm like, I'm so joyful for them that it's like turning this feeling where I really want to cry, but I don't have a good reason to cry. So I'm like giving myself an actually like good.
Your empathy. Your empathy is kicking in.
Reason to cry, as opposed to like me like turning on a song about how my life sucks and me being like, yeah, my life does fucking suck. Like, like it's just better for me to feel like crying. It's like, oh, Extreme Makeover Home Edition. that's another one.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think it was funny where like, yeah, I'm going to cry and yeah, my life is like, that's what I lean into. Yeah. I lean into that. I lean into that hatred, you know, like that self-deprecation.
I used to, but now I got to turn my mood on a dime. You got to go to a show. You got to figure that shit
that
out.
That is, you know what, 100%. So like I was going to say, doing stand-up, has that affected, you know, especially, and you already say you got to change it at the, you know, like on a dime, has that affected the way you went about taking care of yourself? Or did that like kind of how would I say it, did it like expedite or like push you to, you know, explore that even more? Because I know, because here's the thing, that for me at least, when I started stand-up, it forced me to like learn more about myself, because you can't just go up on stage and then do the same shit ass fucking routine. You know what I mean? It has to come from a place that's very deep and personal and emotional for it to actually want to feel and make sense on stage. You know,
I love that question because it struck something in me I have not really thought about until now, which is I always wanted like a squad. Uh-huh. When I was in high school, I wanted to be in like a clique. You know, I wanted to be part of something. I never was.
Yeah.
In college, I was like, well, maybe like a sorority or like, you know, college theater or something. I just never like.
You wanted a belonging. You wanted some place to fit in. Yeah, I just wanted
like a group of people. Like I see a lot of people. It's like, oh, we're these girls, or like we do this together. We all are friends, and we're a group of friends. I tried for that. I wanted that. And then when I got to comedy, it was a total acceptance where I was like, I'm not meant to have that because I'm meant to focus on myself.
Yeah.
And the reason why my career has been expedited, it really has for me. Like, partially because I have a degree in writing and in theater. Okay. Yeah. That helps.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely helps.
Like, it
yeah.
really helps. But, like, more than I really give it any credit to, right?
And, yeah.
But the other thing is, like, yeah, when you're just up here, like, I don't feel the need to express or taper or tame any material or jokes to anybody else because it all is up here.
It all comes from
you. It's not coming from riffing with my friends.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, I see people do that, and then they try to work that material on stage, and it doesn't work for the normies because you were riffing with your comic friends. Yeah. There's no context. Like, there's no...
Yeah, yes, you know, absolutely. You have to... It's almost like you have no to... Dynamic. There needs to be, like, a premise.
Right.
And then you telling that narrative, and what does it say in the overall? Like, and what is it you're trying to say overall?
I see, like... And I also don't watch a lot of comedy. I hate to say it because I really
no,
do.
don't.
I want to be on SNL. Yeah. I do, but I didn't even have a TV until I was 15.
Yeah.
And so it's like I am so disconnected to that world that I've lived in imagination land for 30 years. And it is an awesome
yes.
place.
Yeah, like, because it's pure. It's strictly pure, from you.
It saved me my entire life.
Yeah.
It saved me just retreating to this safe kind of place in my mind.
Yeah.
And so now to share that part with everybody else, not only is it like, hey, I'm giving you guys permission to be super weird in this room, but also you guys are giving me permission to be super weird and get paid
to
for
to share
it.
My weirdness yeah. with you. I'm sharing my yeah. weirdness
and
with you on stage.
Yeah. 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 So that part is, but I think acknowledging that I was always going to be a loner,
mm-hmm.
as much as it's hurt me, like yeah. Sometimes I sit at home and I'm on Instagram and I see, you know, this group of people.
Oh God. You know what? Look, let me tell you something about that kind of shit.
Yeah.
It is not always what it seems.
You're right.
It's
you're right.
Not.
But I get lost. I sometimes when I'm down on myself,
yeah,
like,
don't,
I start feeling
don't.
Like, man, I just wish, like when it came to the wedding, thinking yeah. about like bridesmaids and who to invite.
Ooh, can I,
was
I
like,
go? No, I was like, no, it's okay. I just like cake. You know, I'm into cake.
Well, it's a destination. It's in Maryland.
Oh, okay. Oh, never mind. Yeah,
it's at an abandoned amusement park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Turned that's, national park. It's really cool. But even just trying to find out, I'm like, who do I want to invite to the wedding? Because my family is so massive
yeah.
that like, really it's only my family, but there's maybe five people that I could invite. And what it came down to, I was like, I want to invite those. There's not a group of my gaggle of girls, of five girls that I grew up with and they're my best friends. It's like I have people, individuals who have seen me through the worst time
and those are
of
people,
my life.
Yeah.
I want to celebrate the best day of my life with the people who stuck by me
through thick and thin, right?
Through the times yeah. where it's like, you know, I have a maid of honor and a man of honor. My man of honor, he knows my mom. He knows the whole family dynamic. You know, like he just gets it. Like I don't have to explain or warn anyone and be like, hey, she might say something about the Civil War that is very,
oh my
very
God.
Untrue. Because she's...
Yeah, yeah, no.
An old white lady, but you know. Like
yeah, so you will say that comedy has it helped? Like, has it been therapeutic?
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. To me, it's like... It's like giving purpose to pain.
Yes. That is a very beautiful way of putting it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. It's like, okay, all of that it's like these jokes, if I let myself go to this level where I do talk about child abuse, I talk about alcoholism, I talk about my mom. She said I wasn't strangling her. I was stabilizing her neck so I could rip her fucking mouth off.
Like, oh my God, I'm fucking dead. I'm sorry. That's
my mom. Because
that's the kind of shit abusive people say. They try to justify it. Yeah.
But it's like also funny.
Yeah, it is, you know? Though, because you're thinking how absurd it is, and it's so truthful, and but, you're like, this doesn't need to be written, it's just there. Yeah.
And with PTSD, one of the beautiful things about it is you're reliving these moments. All of that trauma is like stored in the cells of your body, dude. So when you are reenacting these moments on stage,
it gives it more.
But your response is flip-flopped, whereas before your response would be, oh, I'm afraid of this woman.
Yeah.
But now you're all laughing together. You're changing.
And you're like, taking away the power from the pain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like you're retraining the cells in your body to respond positively to a negative memory or negative kind of like anxiety.
Yeah.
Feeling you have.
Yeah. You're going from victim to survivor.
Yeah. Then the one thing I will say too is, when it comes to, the guy breaking into my apartment, comedy made, I couldn't do comedy for probably 3 or 4 months after, at least. I think I did very, very little in the 6 months after he broke into my apartment. Because my partner at the time was away on a work trip to Canada. And I remember one of the breaking points of he and I breaking up was he had said something to me where he was like, you haven't done a show in like 3 months. Do you still consider yourself a comedian?
What kind of asshole thing is that?
And it shattered me because it's who I am.
Yeah.
I am here to unite people over joy, to bring people together, make people laugh. But also, I have a weird thing where I know so many weirdos. I'm totally supposed to like connect the weirdos together. Yeah. I feel very confident. And I'll share, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of brings something, for me at least, into perspective, what you said. 'Cause, I mean, we're talking about giving purpose to our pain. You know what I mean? And I think that, because you mentioned how you were a weird kid growing up.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was a way, because I mean, obviously you weren't doing stand-up as a child. You were doing stand-up as a child?
I was. I had middle child syndrome.
Okay,
so
but
hard,
I mean, that's where I'm going You weren't like officially going on stage. You were doing stand-up, but you didn't realize. That's what I mean. Like that was
like trying to be
like
famous,
your personality, the way you acted out as a child, that was your way of like, okay, I'm making something funny. This is so that whatever it is that I'm dealing with mentally, that's how I'm getting through it. Like the little idiosyncratic, you know, behaviors that we all have or we adopt, the things that make us loners, you know what I mean? You get what I'm saying? Yeah.
I think you also like coming from a big family, like having a very angry mom, it's like I just wanted love wherever the frick I could get it. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of everybody is clapping for me right now. Like, I don't feel love at home, but when I get on stage and everybody just thinks I am like the coolest little thing, like, you know, I remember I did Jokes for Jesus at church camp.
Jokes for Jesus?
Yes, I did it at church. I won the Christ-like award at my church camp for telling jokes for Jesus when I was in elementary school. Uh-huh. And then I would take these socks when I would go to my grandma's house. I'd take these socks and I was like 6 years old and I'd put them in like a gown, like, so I would have tits and I would walk around her house with socks and a gown and I'd be like, who else but a bosom buddy would sit down and tell you just how rotten you are, you know, from Auntie Mame. I just was always that kind of
you're very animated,
like
animated
theatrical kind of kid.
Yeah.
But it's because I think when I saw other people watching stars, like watching people that they were so thrilled by, I was like, I want to make people feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, my mom has everything it takes to make people feel that way. If she didn't have an imbalance in her mind, like, just, like, a chemical imbalance in her mind.
Do you think that
she has all the writing skills, all the people skills? Like, she's so funny. She's so quick. And my dad, he's a weird one. But, like, you know, but it's, like, I saw she uses her powers to make you feel like shit about yourself. And like, I use those powers to make people feel awesome. Yeah. And like, I saw that where I was like, you know, people are hanging on every word she's saying. Why?
Yeah.
You know, and then you start getting into, well, what is it that's so interesting that she's saying? What's getting their attention? What do they like about this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's character. You know, it's like having a big personality.
That's true.
Or being a, just not a big personality, but having a personality. Like it doesn't have to, I don't mean big by like loud
just
or out there.
Just a presence, right. Essentially. Yeah. A presence.
Yes,
yeah.
Totally.
No, you're right. You're right. Doing that, I mean, people conscientiously kind of have, I wouldn't say conscientiously. I mean, whether they like it or not, they have the ability to persuade people. You know what I mean? And some people use it for good, you know, and then there's other people that waste it. You know, they waste that potential.
Or the only way that they know how to use it is destructive because of, like, my mom's upbringing was that way. Mm-hmm. Very destructive, very negative. That's all she knew how to do for us. So, but then somehow, you know, the
cycle broke.
Yes. And a whole bunch of her kids were like, well, you don't really seem happy. Dad doesn't really seem happy. So why would I do the exact same thing that you're doing? Because like chances are it would have the exact same result.
Yeah.
Why don't I just try something else? And like the chances of me actually, like I have a proper chance at really being happy.
Yeah, so you technically realize you were very conscientious of that. You realizing you broke the cycle of inherited trauma.
I thought it was ugly on her. Like her, the way she wore her trauma. I was like, I can't. And then I started noticing things in myself. Like I was lying, like young. I was like, I don't want to be a liar, but I feel like my mom lied all the time. And like I got used to it. And it's like, I don't want to be a liar anymore. I'm going to work on that.
Yeah, that becomes a compulsive behavior, you know, and then it just keeps going.
A lot of times you have to consciously try to be a better person.
Yeah, no, that's true.
When you grew up in that way, especially like my partner, his parents are just like pure good. They are just so good. Like they're good people. They're honest people. They're loving. Like,
do you think it's like, for me, I think like being a good person doesn't necessarily mean like you go out of your way to do it, but you're more like a certain level of self-awareness.
Right. Yeah. They're inherently good. They're empathetic, but they're honest. Like all the things that are important to me on my moral compass, which is like, you know, they're loyal, they're supportive, they, you know, they.
Oh, that's just a moral compass, you know, that's just a moral compass, being loyal.
Oh,
supportive.
I mean, just like,
yeah,
just like they're there for you. Yeah. Like they're good people. Like they don't back down when things get hard.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
That's the one thing that separates like kind of traditional, oh, do unto others as you want to be done to you. Whatever. Yeah. There's all that stuff. But in LA, what I miss, that hole that wants to be filled, is the loyalty, is that I will stand by you no matter what. Like, you're allowed to be human, you're allowed to make mistakes. We all treat this town, a lot of us transplants, me, myself included, I treated San Francisco like this. We treat it as a stepping stone. And it's a very transitional kind of town into the next kind of thing of your life. So nobody is really kind of honing in on these deep, serious relationships and friendships because we're all temporary here. Everything, and then it's also you're tempted by the next best thing all the time.
That's interesting that you put that into perspective. I never really put that into perspective.
But like, they don't need the next best thing, his parents. They love me. Like, they think I am the best thing. Like, for him. Yeah. Like, they're not waiting for something cooler.
I thought that was interesting that you said that about the way people look at relationships in Los Angeles.
That is true. That's how I feel, because I'm one of those people who's like, I'll stick with you, like, through whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, there is a certain level of when folks bring their own crazy, like, bring too much crazy on themselves. You know, say that you know you like a certain kind of dude who ends up just kind of treating you like crap, and, you know, like at a certain point, like I would be like,
You gotta grow out of it. Yeah, exactly.
I want to be here for you. And it happened. The only reason I know even how to like these, this level of like interpersonal communication is because my best friends have also done extensive therapy. So we give each other these like tips and tricks. My friend did this with me and she was like, you know what? I was complaining about my ex-boyfriend for a year. I just missed him. It was my first real love. I was like, oh, man, I was so stuck.
That requires a certain level of honesty right there. You're like, yeah, you know, I was complaining. I thought I was being a bitch.
I was awful for a year. And I even hated myself. Like for the first time, I was like, why can't I just get the fuck over this cokehead idiot? What is wrong with me?
But you know what, man? There's nothing wrong with venting though. Yeah. You know,
but
that's how you have to see it in your head. You're like, I'm releasing this.
Right. But also it's like, it was the only thing that you would ever think about. And it was during the pandemic and I was just in here all the time going around.
Well, maybe it's because there's a lack of resources during that time, as you explained.
I tried online too, but it just didn't have the same efficiency.
But I mean, I'm glad that you came and, you know, you shared your story and wow, that's a lot, you know. I was like, I didn't expect all that. Like, it was like an accordion, you know.
Well, also, I don't talk about a lot of this stuff
with
a lot of people because I think the biggest enemy to comedy is pity.
Oh, no, we're not here to pity each other.
Lot of times it's instinctual to be like, oh, you poor thing. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Any woman, any person you see who's trudged through some of their own mucky muck and tried to get to their own other side, you just say, good fucking on you.
Yeah.
Good job, dude. Like, nice work. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Like, that seems really hard. You're like, yes, it was. No, it's not just, oh, I'm outgoing and positive because I'm a Cancer Leo.
Yeah.
Like, no, this was therapy. This was work. Yeah. This was like me seeing the best people around me and being like, I want those people to also want to be around me. Like,
Use whatever it is that they went through as a strength rather than something to hold them back. And this is the reason why I started doing this podcast.
I love it.
Because obviously I have a mental illness and a lot of people would just pity me. And I'm like, don't do that. I've made it past the hardest part. You know what I mean? Now, for me at least, it's to empower other people.
Exactly.
To talk about whatever it is that they went through so that they can empower other people to do the same.
And to learn, like, even though, like, a crappy experience happened with me with the men, with multiple men in my life, but it happens to all women. But like for me, all it did was push me to want to do better for the women in my community.
Yeah.
So I run.
Yeah, you run a lot of female run shows. Yeah.
So what did I do? I turned it into something where it's like, okay, there's a hole here in our world, which is an extremely safe place for women. I'll build it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it. If you see something that needs to be done, you know, my mom was, she had her own issues too, but there were certain things where I felt like there was a moment of clarity and things made sense, you know, like the crazy starts making sense. And then that's when you start you're like, oh shit, I don't know, mom, you know, but you know, like some of the things that I wonder too was, is she really crazy or is just like, there's a method to that madness.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think, that doesn't have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
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 It's just, I'm with you. It's hard to believe, you know, like, the whole like strangling thing next to like, you know, don't hit your brother.
You're like, you do as I say, not as I do, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
She literally tagged me in a Facebook post like that yesterday.
Wow.
That's what old white women do.
Oh,
they tag you in a lot of Facebook posts.
Yeah, but we've reached the end of this episode of this podcast. Thank you guys for listening to Becca Ward. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Becca Ward Comedy. Same on Facebook. Yeah. All the socials, Becca Ward Comedy.
Hell yeah. And she has a show. She has a great show at Hamburger Mary's. You know,
yeah, that's on Eventbrite. Eventbrite. LB,
yeah, yeah. Beach. Well, at least for the people that could physically tune in, because I know I got people tuning in across the country. So, yeah, I mean, at least listen, follow her, give her a follow.
Yeah, my YouTube, my taping will be out on YouTube.
There you go. Soon, yeah, so that's exciting. Laugh After Dark. Dang, man! Congratulations that and on the marriage thing.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I mean that's cool a life thing, you know. And remember, when things get tough, what do we got to do? We just got to remember it's gonna be okay,
it's
right?
Gonna be okay.
Thank you.
It will. Thank you.
Thank you.